Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I like his teeth. I think that. Yeah. I think they're nice.
Welcome back to the Front Three, ladies and gentlemen. Alongside me today is Statman Dave.
Yo. It's the Statman from Manchester.
You never know what's going to come out of Dave's mouth.
Incredible. Lawrence is here as well. Lawrence, how are you?
Hello. How are you doing? Yeah, very good, thank you. How are you?
Good. I'm tired. I'm very tired.
Really? Have you just had a child or something?
I was thinking, oh yeah, I'm really tired. The neighbours are having a party. Woe is me. I realise that's probably not going to go very far with you. He's got a newborn baby. But I was just talking to Dave pre-show as well, and he's very tired himself, you know, for a perfectly legitimate reason as well, aren't you, Dave?
Yeah, you see, you
an
know,
adult when reason.
And a very adult reason. With Warzone coming out just pre-lockdown, you've got to commit to the win still, Lawrence McKenna.
Right.
So, okay. You know, three victories yesterday. I call it the hat trick on Warzone. But it kept me up quite late.
He was playing PlayStation, Lawrence. Look at this. It's like, I'm sure. At what time are you up to, Lawrence? Were you up late?
My bedtime, I very quickly adapted to the fact that I'm not ever going to have 8 hours sleep ever again.
Really?
I go to bed about 1 a.m. I wake up about, you know, maybe an hour later or so. Maybe you wake up a little while after that. It's not, honestly, it really isn't that bad.
It's not that bad. Okay, like, that's good.
A lot of men and a lot of women as well do this thing where they're like, oh, you know, it's terrible. You'll never sleep. It's awful.
It's like a war zone.
Really? Honestly, I know there are a lot of guys listening to this. It's not that bad. Like, you will be fine. And you just have to be like, yeah, it's cool. Don't worry about it. Like, I'm on camera every day. And I think the good thing for me is my look is already, I look like shit. So that's my aesthetic. But no one seems to have noticed any difference.
So you can basically, Dave, for example, won't have to change his lifestyle when he has children. He can still play a PlayStation until 1 a.m. in the morning.
Here's the thing, Dave. You just leave the baby on your chest, Dave. And the baby thinks, quality time with daddy. You're going, quality time with the MP5. Am I right?
Am I right, boys? Time to get some dubs.
Very good. It's making me feel old, Norris. I mean, I do play this game. I'm not quite as expert as Dave, but I feel there's a difference happening here. You know, like, you're being kept up by children, I'm being kept up, and I'm complaining about noisy neighbours. Dave is still playing the PlayStation till the early hours. There's a difference in lifestyles now.
My friend actually sent me a picture the other day of us when we first started the Front Three in like the offices where you were
so naive
at the time. And I basically looked at that picture and thought, I literally had no worries in my life. like no issues.
Just breezy.
It was so easy. I looked awake. I looked relatively in good shape. Like, things were just so great in my life. And very little has changed, if I'm honest, Boltwood, since then.
Yeah,
so
just adulthood fantastic. Has happened.
I also think, you just get, some people want to lament age or want to lament being, you know, not in your early 20s anymore. Mm. I don't really see it as an issue. Like, it's really not a problem for me.
Well, Lauren, speak for yourself, mate. I'm still 21 in my head.
Dave goes to bed at, what time do you go to bed, Dave?
It's 2:45.
I'm going to try and join you, Dave. I'm going to try and reclaim my youth. Pretend I'm 21 again and stay up till 3 in the morning playing PlayStation. Exactly. I'm in.
I would love the Front Three. The Front Three streaming
Call of Duty.
Call of Duty Warzone would be amazing.
I think Dave would get quite annoyed with us.
Have you managed to statize this game? Have you got the statistics down for this game? Are you like, Mate, you know,
I,
have you got expected
I
kills?
Look at my stats. Yeah, bro, I always look at my stats after every game.
Yeah, but Dave, have you got expected kills? Have you got okay.
I've basically got the how many kills I need to get to a certain point of having a certain KD ratio. And that's the aim that I'm trying at the moment.
Wow.
Okay, KD ratio, but for anyone, it's kill death. Kill death. Just do it. Yeah.
You're a good gamer, Lawrence. I respect you.
Yeah, I am. Yeah, I know my. I'm no noob, huh?
Oh,
hey,
I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm breaking it all up. Yeah. Okay. All right, mate. Wait, when you say 30 something, it makes me sound like I'm like 35 or something. I'm in my early 30s, right? Yeah, yeah.
Four-year-old McKenna.
We should talk about some football, to be honest. That's what we're here for. We're going to talk about Manchester United today, talk about Chelsea as well in the battle for the top four. We're also going to finish by talking about Thiago Alcantara. Is he on his way to the Premier League champions? Before we get into all that, though, I did want to talk about this new rule that's going to come in officially this morning. Well, they're extending the rule. The International Football Association Board has decided to extend the five substitutes rule to cover all of the 2020-21 season. Pretty negative reaction to this, I think it's fair to say, online. Immediate negative reaction. Dave, what do you make of this? A lot of people saying, obviously, it favours those clubs with deeper squads, with bigger budgets. What's your thoughts?
It favours squads or teams that develop youth, in my opinion. It means that youth players can get more minutes. So people that actually work on an academy and work on that base will you know, improve their squads. I understand what people are saying. Obviously, City have got an unbelievable bench, probably the best in the league by a mile. But at the same time, I think this is better for... This is where the game's going. I think tactically, there's a lot more that they could do. I've been very disappointed with what managers have done tactically. I think there's a lot more you can do with it. Whether they're being conservative because it's the back end of the season and they've got to get results, fair enough. But they should be changing the shapes more with the changes. Look, if you're a goal down, why not put on three strikers? Then when you've got back into the game, when it's 2-1, revert, bring on two defenders. Like, there's a lot more to come from it. I'm kind of excited that it's staying around. And I think it will give young players more minutes, which ultimately is the benefit to the game of football.
Mm. Do you agree with that, Lawrence?
I mean, being an American football fan and a basketball fan, I'm very much into the idea of, playing with the substitutions. You see special teams coming on in American football where they're very, very, like Dave's almost talking about, where bring on strikers and specialize your team in whatever the goal is that you need at that point. And the same in basketball, you roll people on, you roll people off. And it feels very similar the more subs you get. Obviously, we're not roll on, roll off at this point. But I see the benefit of that as well. I also see the negative side that, for instance, Dave, in his stat collection, it's going to affect statistics for some players, maybe minutes played for some guys who are seen in a more specialist position. Maybe it's going to affect how you roll people off, like a Ronaldo, if you want to manage minutes, for example, when as before you might have left Ronaldo on and you might have just left him tired on the left wing. I don't know. So there's a lot. I get what Dave's saying. I think it's really positive because it's definitely also going to reduce injuries, or you'd hope it would reduce injuries in the game. Maybe we'll find that, fresh substitutes get more injuries than players who are tired. I don't know. So maybe there's a difference. But I personally think it's a good thing. And I agree with Dave. I think it, especially bringing on youth, bringing on more people. I also think making more subs earlier on in the game would be much more revolutionary. There's so many different ways that you can use it. I personally think towards the end of the season, managers have basically been told, look, don't take the piss here because, this is a very quick rule change. I wonder if that will change next season when it becomes a bit more of a normalized rule and it feels more like a level playing field for the entirety. Maybe people will have had a bit more time to address that in their squad as well and go, right, if we have five subs, maybe Liverpool are now going, right, well, maybe we keep a Shaqiri then, or maybe we keep, someone like that. So I think it does have big impacts.
Yeah, it's obviously going to be extended for next season because of the limited summer, the limited pre-season that we're having. And it's still going to be a tough schedule next season for a lot of clubs. Do you want to see it extended beyond that day? There hasn't been talk yet of this becoming normalised, but are you saying that you'd want to see this become a permanent rule?
Yeah, I think it does. Yeah, I think football needs to move on with some of its rulemaking, and I think the steps need to be pushed forward. Everyone would have called me crazy if I would have said, got to get rid of, got to have the, offside trap in, you got to, keepers, you can't pass back to a goalkeeper, but they've made big steps in the game, so I'm all for making changes, and I think the five subs is... I think it makes a lot of sense. I really do. I think it makes a lot of sense for the team, for the sport. It just means that you've got 16 players now that potentially could be marketable as well. So the game kind of grows. Everything kind of grows. It kind of makes sense across the board. Yeah. And I'd like to see people using it more, but it's...
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think they're playing their way into it. But I just think that I don't see any negative to it at all, really.
Well, I also think Dave was right in the youth side of things, where actually not only was he talking about young guys coming on the pitch and getting a chance, I also think it gives you an opportunity to start younger guys. Because you go, cool, let's roll the dice here. And if, you know, so for instance, take Mason Greenwood as an example. Clearly at Manchester United, there is a lot of belief in him, and we can all see why at this point. He's a very audacious talent. He's got a long way to go, but you know, you get what I'm saying. But Ole Gunnar Solskjaer can now go, okay, well, I could start him, and feasibly, if he's not having a good game, I've got a spare sub or one or two to be able to take him off or change the game with a Martial or someone like that.
With that youth element, though, does that not go back to the same argument about the clubs with the bigger resources, with the more well-funded academies, the more infrastructure?
It's a bit like there was a show I was listening to ages ago, but it's always stuck with me, about how they wanted to get rid of Wolves, not from the Premier League, but from a Forest in North America. And it had unforeseen repercussions on the ecosystem that they just didn't see coming. So, for instance, there was more erosion in the river. So the shape of the river changed more. Certain fish couldn't go down that way anymore. What I'm basically saying is there's small changes when you change a tiny thing in the ecosystem that you can't necessarily see coming. So, for instance, it might actually be that we don't see the biggest change in the Premier League. It might actually be we see the biggest change in the Championship, where, for instance, Rhian Brewster is currently on loan to Swansea City. If Liverpool have an extra sub next season, they go, okay, well, maybe we can change the strikers up. Maybe we keep a young guy. Maybe a Mason Greenwood or a Tammy Abraham from a few years ago wouldn't go out on loan and would actually stick around with, not I'm saying Mason Greenwood needed to, but, you know, there's a lot more there. The thing that I think needs addressing is less about the subs. I think that's actually good for the game in the short term and probably shows where the game is going, because we've got more physical exertions on the players anyway, just purely because of what they're being asked to do, especially when it comes to pressing, which will only go further. Sorry, Dave.
That's a great point. Like, so imagine, right, you play your front five and you basically, they work like dogs for like 60 minutes, and then you just, or even half. Like, you press like shit for half and then you flip it at half time and you play another team.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really interesting point, I think.
But also, I think there are teams that can, like Liverpool probably is a team that could afford to do that, or probably could do that. If you played your back five of, you know, you have Fabinho just sitting in front of the defence. When Liverpool, if Liverpool were to get Thiago, which I'm sure we'll come on to later, you could feasibly play Jordan Henderson and James Milner in the first half, keep it very defensive. In the second half, you could just massively press an opposition that's very, very tired with Naby Keita and Thiago running the game at the back. There's loads of options there. I think the thing that I don't want to see extended is managers being able to talk to their team during the break. Because I mean, maybe it goes one of both ways. Maybe it acts as a bit of a timeout, and maybe that's a good thing, so managers can make some adaptations. But so far, I've not seen it have the revolutionary change that you maybe would want it to. I'd rather see the players stay in the middle and not be able to speak to their manager, have a water break, and that be it.
That's the one that I don't like. I generally don't like that. I think it slows the game down. I think the good one was the game United against Tottenham, Boltwood. You sneaked away with a sneaky point. That break, United.
Oh, it's not a Spurs fan anymore.
I don't like to talk about Spurs.
No, but United were massively on top, and then that momentum was killed. And I think that's happened a few times.
Oh, so it didn't go your way, Dave.
No, there you go. So it happened a few times in other games where the game was really good and then they had a water break and it kind of just sucked all the life out of it. And I think that is an issue.
Is that?
Especially with Mourinho. I mean, maybe Mourinho needs to get in there.
He
amongst
sucks all the life out of everything.
The hell
but yeah. Would you not like that, Lawrence? It's almost, it does feel like, as you were saying, an American sport in a way. It's in quarters now and you get that chance to kind of reset and potentially change the course of a game. I don't mind it.
And obviously insert another ad break in there somewhere at some point. It's much easier.
Oh, that's staying then, isn't it, Lauren? Good idea.
I think the thing that I would say with that is, especially for a team that's pressing like Liverpool, you are partly thinking the opposition are going to be exhausted from this. Giving the opposition a break during that time to catch their breath means that maybe a player is less likely to panic or less like, because he's got those couple of minutes to regroup. He's got a manager coming over and going, you're doing great, well done, keep doing that to Mane or keep doing that to Salah. You don't want that as a pressing team. So maybe the way the game's going doesn't necessarily benefit from that.
I want to talk about Manchester United. We haven't talked about Manchester United in a few weeks. And obviously, everything's coming up Millhouse. for them now, Dave. It's been some turnaround. 3 wins in a row.
He's so Milhouse.
Games without defeat. I think it's 16 in all competitions without a loss. They're now 5th, just 4 points behind Leicester City with a game in hand. Who they play in a few weeks, it's all in their hands in terms of their destiny for the top 4. I mean, you were there at Old Trafford on the weekend for MUTV as they brush aside Bournemouth. What's the mood like around Manchester United now? What's the atmosphere like around the club?
It's good. I think it's in Bruno Fernandes' hands. I think Man United have won more points and scored more goals than any other team in the Premier League since he made his debut in the competition.
Oh.
But also, he's been directly involved in 55% of those goals. His stats are a joke since he's debuted in the Premier League. You know, not only is he second top scorer behind Martial with 7 goals, he's got 6 goals. He's got 5 assists, which is the most in the competition. He's been directly involved in 53 shots in just 9 games. This man is a phenom. This is the biggest impact I've ever seen from a January transfer. And a biggest impact I've ever seen, to be like, it's just fast. It's a fast impact that's come out of absolutely nowhere. The mood is excellent at Old Trafford. I think the players are enjoying playing together. I think Paul Pogba's got more responsibility at the base of midfield, which is good. I still think there's aspects of his game he needs to improve. How he presses, how he defensively is aggressive in certain situations. Sometimes
he can do that at Real Madrid though, can't he, Dave?
Oh yeah, of course. But unfortunately, COVID has blocked all the transfers like that in football, which, you know, it's an interesting one for Manchester United, because without COVID, would Paul Pogba still be at the football club?
No.
No. But United now have an unbelievable front line as well, that it's really exciting. I think, number one, Rashford's improving with his passing. Number two, Anthony Martial is pressing more. He's scoring more. He's in the box more. He's taking more touches in the penalty area. Number three, Mason Greenwood is a joke of a footballer. Like, that is the, you know,
in
the talent
way
that he's got is, I've never seen an 18-year-old this good.
Wow. And that backs up, obviously, what Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has been saying a lot about. This is the best finisher he's ever worked with. Obviously, you know, with the pedigree of player he's played alongside during his career.
Did he play with Van Nistelrooy?
Yeah.
He did, yeah.
Cantona, Sheringham, York Cole.
Just a little Van Nistelrooy segue. Sorry to dive back in.
Please do.
The way that Martial scored his second goal, I think, against Bournemouth.
Yeah.
Was very Ruud van Nistelrooy-esque. He was offside, just checks in, opens his gate up, side foot support home.
So,
like, it was very, very, very...
You've got the reincarnation of Ruud van Nistelrooy there, and then in Mason Greenwood, the reincarnation of Robin van Persie.
I hate that comparison. It's so lazy. It's the laziest thing I've ever heard in my life.
Why?
Because Mason Greenwood is unbelievable on both feet.
Well, go on, mate. Who's Persie. He like then? We need to say who he's like, Dave. You need someone who he's like.
He isn't like anyone. He's an individual in the system.
No, Dave.
I just think it doesn't...
Is it Cruyff?
It doesn't strike the ball like Van Persie. His gait is a little bit similar to Van Persie, but that's about it. Like, the way that he runs, a little bit like Van Persie. Like,
he runs a bit weird,
God damn, it's so lazy. Some of the punditry I've seen over the last few days has been shocking.
Ooh.
What was the one yesterday that I called out? He said Aubameyang was like Ian Wright.
He's a striker at Arsenal. What's wrong with that?
Both audacious personalities playing for Arsenal, Dave. What is your problem?
Well, number one, Aubameyang is playing on the left wing at the moment and scoring from the left wing. But hey, Lawrence, it doesn't fucking matter.
And did Ian Wright, Dave, ever go on the left wing at any point or ever stray
towards
the left
career,
wing?
Yeah, whole career, mate. Playing left wing, didn't he?
Let me bring it back to Manchester United, specifically Bruno Fernandes, because, as you're saying, you can't underestimate his impact. But I just want to understand exactly what he's brought to this side that seems to have unlocked so much around him. Obviously, he's playing in a slightly more advanced position. He started pulling the strings. What is this magic ingredient that he's bringing that was missing before?
Look, guys, this is what I was missing. I've just screen shared, right? It's a picture.
Oh, God,
Bruno
right. We've entered some sort of PowerPoint presentation for those at home.
Good for the audio listeners.
Look at that. Right,
Dave, your tabs are a mess, mate.
Sorry, guys. But look, right. This encapsulates Bruno Fernandes. This paints the picture. All right. just made an impact on the pitch. Just bagged a free kick. I think this is just after he scored the free kick, right? Look at that smile.
Yeah.
We are looking at a smiling
picture of Bruno Fernandes. Bruno's got his little teeth sticking out, so his little top teeth.
Oh yeah.
His little teeth.
Like, big enough.
Wow. Dave, would you say his teeth are small like Ronaldo or small like Nani? Because he's Portuguese, so which player is he?
Oh, good point, Lawrence. I like his teeth. I think he's got good teeth. But that little smile, right? Next time you look at a Bruno Fernandes
infectious,
picture, have a look for that smile. And that is infectious. And that is not only... That is him as a player. He's infectious in his attitude. He's infectious how he defends off the ball, how he organises the team in and out of possession, how he drives the attack, how he gets on the ball, never hides, drops deep, pulls left, pulls right. This is an absolute phenom. But I think this picture sums him up.
Yeah, I guess the other thing is, Dave, what I'm hating or loving right now is that I actually quite like this Manchester United team. They're actually quite likeable in the same way as I like this Chelsea team, in the same way as I like quite a few of the young sides coming through at the moment. And weirdly, I mean, the only player that I don't really like, maybe it's because he's also successful, is Phil Foden. He just doesn't, you know, but... Maybe I will like him in a few years' time, but I really like Rashford. I really like Greenwood. You know, I really like Tammy Abraham. All these guys seem like good guys who are also able to play football. I kind of want there to be, you know, I want them to be a bit James Bond bad guy-ish, but they're not. They're just nice guys.
They're just likeable. Yeah, it's annoying. The thing is, Dave, how excited are you getting, or how excited can Manchester United fans be? Because obviously, as I say, this has been some revitalization from where they were at the start of the season. Since the restart, and since, as you're pointing out, Bruno Fernandes has come in, it's been an unbelievable turnaround. But how confident are you that they can carry this form into next season, that they can evolve and go into that campaign and put in a sustained challenge for the top four? Do you think that's realistic? How far can this enthusiasm, this optimism go?
I can go far. I think United will easily be the third best team in the league. I think that's standard. I think Chelsea's defence over the course of a season isn't really good enough. I think we've seen that with some of the goals they've conceded. I think Chelsea, in a way, kind of frustrate me. I don't massively like watching Chelsea at the moment. I think they are very frustrating. They lack a few things in
we'll
the side.
We'll come on to them. Don't worry.
I think with United, it's... We like a few players away. I think if David De Gea continues letting in the ball in his near post, then that's somewhere where you might have to look at recruitment. I think he's not as good with his feet as other keepers in the league, Edison, Alisson. And if he's not doing what he really does well, which is save shots, that, you know, that's his default goalkeeping set. He's got a bit of a problem. I think you've got to look at potentially having another centre-half in there. I think Maguire really needs someone with pace next to him, like a quick defender next to him. I think we saw Bournemouth isolate Lindelof quite a few times with either Stanislas or whether Solanke pulled onto him and then just chip it into the channel. I think you need someone that's quick that can get across the ground. I think at left back, for the system to truly work, and I still think there's a few things that needs to be done. I think you need a left back that can attack, that can actually deliver a ball, that can actually, you know, slow himself down in the final third. I think in central midfield, defensive midfield, I thought Matic getting a new contract was well deserved, but the length of it doesn't make sense to me.
Is it a four-year contract?
As a DOF, I wouldn't be doing that. So that's a question mark there. I think the interesting thing is the question that's posed because of Mason Greenwood is, why do you need Jadon Sancho? Why do you need Jack Grealish? Well, you need those two players to improve the squad. And if United want to get back up to the right level of Liverpool and City, they need to have an unbelievable squad. So that makes both the signings sense. Like, it makes sense to get both those signings. But before United do buy someone like Jadon Sancho, do they need to improve that first team squad first before they sign someone? Because like Mason Greenwood has been incredible and needs to continue playing football. So you need his development to continue. With Jadon Sancho there, does that minutes get cut, like we were saying, or does the fifth sub rule help him out in that situation? So I think there's a real sort of point now with United's recruitment of where do they actually go. I think I would sign Jadon Sancho just because he is that good. Like, he has got Lionel Messi numbers in players under 23, like Sterling had. Similar thing, so far away from his peers, you've just got to get him. But then I think the recruitment around that needs to be good enough. And I think that is where United needs to maybe look. I think defensively, 130 million for Maguire and Aaron Wan-Bissaka isn't value.
No shit,
isn't
Dave.
Value in the market for what they are. And I think that's something United need to evaluate, is if they're going to buy a left back for a similar price from the Premier League, they're going to have an issue. Like, me personally wouldn't be recruiting in the Premier League at all right now. I think there's no value in the Premier League.
Right.
So I'd be buying from abroad, full stop. Wouldn't sign anyone from the Premier League. I'd get my, you know, young talented players from my academy, English players from the academy, and that's how I'd grow that. And that's what my focus would be that. But I think that's the side of it, that look, there's players coming through, Mejbri, Mengi, who are supremely talented, young players that could come into the squad at attacking midfield at centre half. Like, this is the thing. There's question marks for the recruitment process at the moment at Manchester United of what they do next. But I would say focusing on a centre half and a left back and a goalkeeper would be the way I would go right now.
A first choice goalkeeper?
Well, this is the thing. If, like, David De Gea has been bad the last 2 years. Like, we can't not look at that.
What do you put that down to? Because I've seen some suggestions that it could simply be complacency. You know, awarded that huge new contract, isn't pushing himself enough, and therefore the standards have slipped.
Maybe. Maybe that's a very good point. Like, I don't know David personally. I don't know how he trains. I don't know how he performs on a day-to-day basis. But that makes sense to an outsider looking in. I think you could also look at it that, like, his peak was incredible. United came second in the league and he saved like 16 goals that he shouldn't have saved. 16 goals. Like, that is incredible. Like, he peaked massively for about three seasons. Like, he was the best goalkeeper on the planet. Like, we've got to remember that players aren't like Messi and Ronaldo. Like, they have peaks. maybe De Gea's peaked. Like, you look at some of the best keepers like Dida, Casillas. There's so many keepers that I remember from European football that literally peaked for 2 years and that's it. Dida was unbelievable for two seasons for AC Milan.
And then he fell off. Casillas.
Casillas was unbelievable for a few seasons at Real in two periods. I think Youngu was really good from like 1980-20. Then he had another period. That's the thing David De Gea needs to do. Edwin van der Sar-esque transformation. Have that good start of your career at Ajax. Go to Juve. Fail at Juve. Go Fulham. Rediscover your form. Then at Manchester United, you're now a smart keeper. You don't have to make the flying saves across the goal because you're positionally, you're better. You're better with your feet. You understand the game more. That's what David De Gea needs to do. And if he doesn't do that, then you've got to look at the market.
But would I know that you're an old man, so a smart keeper is one of those ones where you go, hey, goalkeeper, save that shot. And they do it.
The new breed. Okay,
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
How, just to finish on Manchester United, David, I wanted to ask, how do you assess Ole Gunnar Solskjaer this season? Because obviously the stat during the rounds is Manchester United have now lost less games than Manchester City this season. From the outside looking in, though, I still can't escape this feeling he is a short-term manager. He's there until the right long-term man comes along. Is that an unfair assessment? Now, do you think he's proving that he needs to be judged as someone who deserves to be the Manchester United manager?
I think that's really unfair. I think he's made long-term changes. He has made long-term moves. I think that's what we see from him. He's changed the squad. He's changed the attitude of the squad. He's got rid of a lot of the crap. There's still potentially players that need to be moved on, but that's the nature of football. There's probably players in everybody's squad that you think, you know, Liverpool squad, Spurs squad, you probably need to move him on. You know, he's potentially not at the right level if you want to win the Champions League. And I think that's where United want to be. And I think that's the interesting side that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has shown so far, that he is the long-term man. You know, giving his coaches the ability to make these tactical changes or plans for certain games. You know, United have been fantastic against the top six under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. That's the thing. They've been that good. They just struggle against bad teams. So the thing United need to improve on is their possession play. There needs to be more movement in between the lines. They need to be working, you know, the playing it forward, dropping it off, playing it through again. Like, they need to do better in that situation.
Dave, as a tactical guy, though, you will, you know that Bournemouth or whoever the teams that Manchester United played haven't had as much good defensive structure as Manchester United will come up against. And, these are great results, but they are against teams that are particularly poor right now.
But that's what United were struggling with. That is the issue. That
results against poor teams.
Was struggling to beat the crap. That's what they just couldn't beat the crap. They couldn't break them down. I think that is the question that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer still needs to answer. We saw against Norwich City, United struggled without Pogba in that team. And I think that is structure that needs, like, you basically, your first 11 that you put out on a Saturday needs to have a certain style of football that will break down low blocks, right?
And can be repeatable.
And can be repeatable with Fred, with McTominay, with Pogba, with whoever, Matic, whoever's in midfield, should be the same mentality. Should be the same thing that they're doing over and over again. It just felt, without Pogba in that deeper role, that had a lack of penetration. They had a lack of systematic methodology of how we do this. How do we beat these teams?
I am intrigued to see how Ole Gunnar Solskjaer fares next season, if indeed Manchester United do qualify for the Champions League this season, which I think will be an incredible achievement, given where they were at the start of the season, and given, well, if, given how he was spoken about.
11 points.
Yeah, and given how he was spoken about at the start of the season, I think he's proved that he deserves to be the manager for now. I think it's going to be interesting to see how he copes in that next campaign, where I think there's going to be more pressure, there's going to be more expectation given the level of performance we've seen already. If after a summer transfer window where we see Jadon Sancho come in, where we see the defence improve, as you suggest, how that pressure sort of affects Ole Gunnar Solskjaer as a manager and how that how he's judged. Chelsea, looking like they're going to finish in the Champions League places as well. I want to talk about Frank Lampard's debut season as well at the club. They're ahead of Manchester United right now. They're sitting comfortably in third after last night's 3-2 win over Crystal Palace. It's been a strong restart for them. There was that blip against West Ham, which was very entertaining and enjoyable to see. But it's 5 wins out of 6, including that win over City, which confirmed Liverpool's champions. And although last night's win, those 3 points, I think, were a lot less comfortable than they should have been, they're still a point ahead of Leicester. They're in the driving seat in terms of Champions League qualification. And again, Dave, as we're saying for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, that would be a fantastic achievement for this manager in this campaign.
I think it would, yeah. I think the signings were needed. Like, I don't like this Chelsea team at all. Like, I don't like watching them. I'm not a fan. I think they are boring. I think they play a certain style that I don't like.
Boring.
Scoring goals for fun.
I think, but the goals they conceded just trigger me too much. It generally annoys me. Like the Yarmolenko goal. I was fuming. That annoyed me. How they didn't deal with Antonio for pretty much an entire game annoyed me. Things like that just annoy me. Like I can't get past it. I'm like, well, like why is this happening in this certain way? Like, why are you not trying to affect this? You know, yesterday, Leicester City versus Arsenal, right? Why has Brendan Rodgers not switched to a back four after 30 minutes? His back three was not working. They were playing 3v3 against Arsenal's front three, and Lacazette was pulling them off, and the other two players running behind. It was so simple. Make the goddamn change. But going back to Chelsea, I feel like Chelsea are going to be so much better next season. They're going to have the Bruno Fernandes signing for Chelsea is Hakim Ziyech. Like, he is going to be that good.
Surely,
when they're just playing Kante in defence, and they've got Mount, Ziyech, Werner, Abraham, Pulisic, you know, it's going to be slightly lopsided. But surely, going into the summer, I'm being facetious,
right?
But going into the summer, surely they need to improve in the defensive positions, look to strengthen there. I know they've already got these incredible attacking players. But as you're saying, that's where the real glaring weakness is. I think it was Andreas Christensen and Kurt Zouma against Palace last night. They looked fragile. There's issues to be addressed there. Who knows if they're going to be addressed this summer, given the outlay they've already spent on these attacking options.
I think that the big side of it is, like, how many games that they're winning by a goal, by a single goal margin, or losing by a single goal margin. They aren't being dominant because, like you say, defensively they're very poor. Like against Palace, if Scott Dan scores back post like he should have done, right at the end, hits the post, like it should be putting that away, given Scott Dan's ability with his head, like that's a draw. And I think that's the side Chelsea are playing a really, really dangerous game at the moment, where they're so open in that respect. I feel like
then Liverpool
trying...
are the same, Dave, because Liverpool are the team in the Premier League with the most one goal margin wins this season.
I tell you what, Liverpool at the moment, I don't know what's going on with that Liverpool team, but all their benefit, all the strengths, all the things that they were doing well, don't seem to be doing that at the moment. Weird. Again, like, you can't let your standards drop. You can't let your standards drop. This is the problem. If Liverpool continue the rest of the season like they're playing at the moment, absolute ass, then they will start next season in bad form and bad mentality, and then that will be an issue for them. They need to be reactive now. They need to be able to start playing.
This is time for Liverpool to treat... Oh, well, I'll talk about them in a minute when I talk about Thiago. But
yeah, we're going
to
talk about...
This is pre-season, Boltwood, because we've earned that right to be able to treat the end of this Premier League season as pre-season.
Just relax.
So I don't know if you noticed, Dave, but there's already a name on the Premier League trophy, and it ain't yours.
What I have noticed, though, Lawrence McKenna, is this Liverpool team's on the slide.
Yeah, of course it is, Dave.
You heard it
first,
Lawrence.
This team's been going absolute tilt for a few years now.
Lawrence taking the bait.
Roberto Firmino is finished.
I said this before, Dave. Dave, did I not text you the other day and say, is this Liverpool team done?
Fortunately, it is, McKenna.
There you go. Over. Thank you,
Dave. Dave, we've spoken about Chelsea's attack. We've spoken about their defence. Glaring weaknesses that need to be addressed. I want to talk about the midfield, because obviously N'Golo Kante and Kovacic were injured last night, which meant Billy Gilmore, Ross Barkley and Mason Mount were the preferred midfield for Frank Lampard. No space for Jorginho, though. Obviously, he came on in those final 10 minutes, helped them control that stage of the game and perhaps showed his value. But it does seem that Frank Lampard doesn't deem him to fit his system, to fit what he's trying to do there. What do you make potentially of Jorginho leaving the club, potentially to fund a move for someone like Kai Havertz, who I keep seeing linked with Chelsea? What do you make of that?
I think that, look, number one, Jorginho just needs to move on for his career. I think that he doesn't really suit Lampard's Chelsea. I think Lampard switched to Kante playing as a holding role, which will take some time for him to develop that position, because for everyone saying that Kante's a defensive midfielder, he's not. He has been, for his entire Premier League career, he has been the energy midfield. He presses people. He jumps out of the shape. He's the one that's biting your ankles. He's a ratter, as I describe. Just bite, goes for you.
A ratter.
Tries to take a like nice chunk out of your leg.
Nice.
Wow.
I people like can't see the video, but that was an insane...
It was an insane bite. I mean, if I could gift that up for people, I'd be so happy. But I'm really upset you're not recording this call.
Sorry.
Sad times.
He doesn't have Zoom Premium anymore or whatever.
Oh, Boltwood, yeah, stingy. Like a Gattuso, that's what Kante is. He presses. So it'll take time for him to adjust. I don't think that Jorginho fits in that midfield. I don't think he's a vault. I think he's still a single pivot himself. I don't think he works in a two. So it's time for him to move on. I worry for Kovacic, I worry for Barkley with the talent that Chelsea have coming through in central midfield. Not only Billy Gilmore, you've got George McEachran, you've got Conor Gallagher.
Is it Josh McEachran or George McEachran,
his brother? Yeah. Good players. And I think they're a lot more progressive. Right. I worry for Kovacic because he's quite sideways. And I think having Kovacic and Kante in midfield is a bit of an issue because they're both quite flat with their passing. They both aren't inspiring on the ball. Why Jorginho was good was because he would play forward. The issue with those two is they're quite safe. And I don't think that midfield works with a third, with Mason Mount as well. Mason Mount actually was really good. I thought was fantastic deep. Played some really good passes from a deeper position. Not the Palace game, the game before. So maybe you're looking at Kante, you're looking at Mason Mount and a third, be it a Hakim Ziyech or, you know, whoever they want to play that would be a good midfield. But in terms of the Kai Havertz stuff, again, recruitment-wise, you buy the player because they're that good. Like, you buy them because they are that good, like Sancho, like United. But you should be buying defenders first.
Yeah, so the priorities.
It's exactly the same paradox. Like, both teams need like depth in attack, right? You're getting supreme depth in attack that City and Liverpool have. But is that the right recruitment decision? In my opinion, no. But if Kai Havertz wants to go to Chelsea, you goddamn buy him because he's that good.
Similarly to Solskjaer, Lawrence, how do you rate Frank Lampard? Because I was really looking forward when he came in to it all going wrong, it all blowing up, a Chelsea legend failing as the manager.
Again,
it hasn't quite worked out that way. Looks out that it looks like they're going to finish in the Champions League places. I think overall it's been a very successful season. I know there's some issues in defence specifically that Dave's mentioned there. But overall, a debut season in the Premier League, I know some people accuse Frank Lampard of getting an easy ride essentially from his mates in the media lovies on Sky Sports.
They do love him.
The ex-pros, etc.
We love him.
Do you buy anything into that, or do you think his achievements this season stand on their own?
I think his achievements are good achievements in the first place because it's a first season for a manager who's never managed in the Premier League before. I think putting it in that context is fantastic. I do think Frank Lampard still has a way to go. We are talking about this defence as if they don't have a starting centre-back for Germany in that back line. And as if... Go on, Dave. You've furrowed your brow, but there are decent football players in that back line for Chelsea. And you can't... But Dave, a few months ago, you were talking about not writing certain players off of Manchester United. And I think a similar thing needs to apply for Chelsea as well, where you can't just go, cool, you're bad. Cool, you're not a good player. There are some players in there that could be either better protected or better coached. And I think Frank Lampard is very good at setting up an attack. I'm not sure that back line has the confidence right now that I've seen him instill in some of the attacking players.
It's a fair point, but they need somebody dominant.
I'm not disagreeing. I think you can still do a better job than that. Mind you, they won 2-1 against Man City and they're a supreme attack. So.
But I think it's just that they're in that current situation where they have they have basically four partners, four players that could excel with a dominant partner. Yeah. And I think that's the problem, that at the moment that it doesn't work with playing two partners.
Correct.
There's nobody that steps up. There's nobody that, like, you know, it's simple to say. It's easy to be like, oh, well, they've not got a Vidic. They've not got a John Terry. They've not got a
Van Dijk. Say it, bitch.
But the problem is the mentality of those defenders right now, there isn't a leader in that back line. There's not somebody that's taking initiative.
And Kepa isn't a leader either.
And Kepa isn't going to give you that. And I think Azpilicueta is waning defensively. At left back, it's a hole as well. And I think that is the issue, that it's not that I don't believe in the four. I believe one of those four will come out good.
Maybe two.
I can't... Like, they have to be playing at a top level. I think what we've seen from Rudiger is he gets exposed at the top level. Kurt Zouma's the same. Rash. Christensen is just all over the place right now. And then Tomori's not really getting a look in. And I think that is the issue, that you've got these four players. One of them will come out. Or maybe two of them. Maybe you're right. Like, Joel Matip and Joe Gomez both look good for Liverpool. Dejan Lovren still looks absolutely toilet. But
and that's why Dejan Lovren will be leaving soon.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the thing, Lawrence. Like, they're making that cut. And I'm looking at Chelsea as, we want to win the league vibe. I think these clubs have to take that approach. Look, if you're at the top level, you want to win the league. Player good enough to win the league? Maybe not. We need to get that. We need to pay, you know, purchase someone the academy.
To add to that, Boltwood, COVID has sort of come along at the right time for Chelsea. It will allow financial fair play to be written off or whatever, which is fantastic for them, considering they're just coming out the other side of a transfer ban. It also gave them a break, possibly when they needed it. And I think that that's very good. It also means that other teams around them possibly won't strengthen in the way that would have brought Chelsea closer towards those teams than it will boost them towards Liverpool. And sometimes I think that's part of it, is even if you can just separate yourself from the rest of the strata of the Premier League and become in that top four, or even just mentally within that top four, in the way that we've seen Chelsea, Leicester, Manchester United, it can make your team, it can give a team so much more status. And let's not be fooled here. There is still a gap between Manchester City and the rest of the league. And I think then it goes Manchester City at the moment, Manchester City, and then there's a small group, about five teams, and then there's the rest of the Premier League.
Well, I wanted to finish by talking about Thiago Alcantara.
So the man who will take Liverpool up to the next strata of football.
This is just it. Highly regarded player, obviously widely respected. 29 years old. He looks set like he's going to leave Bayern Munich this summer. He's got 1 year left on his contract, despite the Bundesliga champions' attempts to convince him to stay. Reports suggest he's
looking for... They've offered him everything, Boltwood.
Yeah.
They've thrown the bag at him.
He's looking for a new... Well, he turned down the bag because he's looking for a new challenge.
Which a new bag is what you think?
Helping Liverpool retain the Premier League title, Lawrence.
Absolutely. Now, Boltwood, I'm obviously being hyperbolic in what I'm saying.
Of course.
And, you know, it's extreme fun sometimes just wind up Dave.
Always.
On the other side of that, Liverpool are losing Adam Lallana, obviously a vital cog in Liverpool's midfield throughout the season.
The way Jurgen Klopp spoke about him, you'd think he was the player of the season.
I mean, to be fair, Adam Lallana at key points in the season has come on and done very tactically intelligent things, which aren't necessarily at the very centre of the play. So he's come on and relieved pressure for Liverpool very often when he's needed it. He's also come on and played on the right of midfield, which I think felt quite weak for Liverpool at the time, relieved a bit of pressure on the likes of a James Milner, those kind of players. But he hasn't been the linchpin that Liverpool obviously wouldn't even expect him to be. All I'm saying is there are personnel that are moving on. We might see, maybe we'll see Wijnaldum not sign a deal. We'll see about that. I also think that when you look at him, he doesn't necessarily fit the profile of a player that could play for Liverpool. A, injury record. B, age. But he does fit their signing profile in the sense that he is good at... He has the potential to be very good at the Jurgen Klopp press. He has the potential to match statistically what Liverpool need in terms of retaining and then getting the ball back from the opposition because of what we've seen is statistically at Bayern Munich. And he also gives an extra dimension to Liverpool that we don't have in midfield at the moment, which feels like a controlling vibe. I don't get that from Fabinho. I don't get that necessarily from Henderson. And when you have a silky player who's doing something that seems intelligent, even if it's exactly the same thing, just with a Cruyff turn in between, that Hendo's doing, then it can change things a little bit. And I also think that this is partly Boltwood down to the fact that there are underappreciated cogs at Liverpool right now, such as Gini Wijnaldum, such as Henderson, and possibly even such as Naby Keita, who's a player who has looked revitalized since the restart. So I think it comes down to Liverpool wanting a player that makes them feel a bit like a Galactico side or a Bayern Munich and go, look, we can attract these kind of guys. And B, a lack of appreciation for what they actually have.
Yeah, I mean, it would feel like a big signing. It feels like a bit of a statement in a way, Dave. You could see it that way. I mean, in terms of Thiago, what do you think he could bring, or what does he offer? What talents would he be bringing to this Liverpool side if he were to sign?
I think the
passing.
The big thing is that control. I think Lawrence is completely correct that Liverpool don't have someone to dictate a game in midfield like they kind of need, and he would completely bring that to the team. I think you could look at it in a respect where you could push Fabinho into central midfield, you could put Keita on the left-hand side, and then as a DM, you play Thiago, and that makes a lot of sense. And that his ability to control the game, move around the press, play good passes in certain areas, makes a lot of sense. I think the negatives of this move, number one, Lawrence, you mentioned it, his injury record, 15 injuries in the last four seasons, going from like knee injuries to groin surgery to torn ankle ligaments. Like, the reason why Bayern Munich might not be extending his deal, or they've moved their midfield on to now being Joshua Kimmich and Goretzka back end of the season, the level of that midfield was better than the level of Kimmich and Thiago, and I didn't think that would be possible, but it was. The issue is Thiago on the down? Can he sustain, you know, playing that many games for Liverpool? You know, his Bayern Munich career, he's only managed 30 games once. And that is the issue, you're going to be buying a player that can't play every week. But could that be right for Jurgen Klopp then, that he's going to play him in certain games and be part of the squad, which does make sense. And I think what Liverpool need to do is improve their midfield. I think Wijnaldum has been on such a high level. Henderson has been on such a high level for so long. And these players are good players, but they've been elevated by Jurgen Klopp. That eventually will fall. Jurgen Klopp needs to time that right. Jurgen Klopp needs to have those replacements ready for those players at the right time. Is this the right? Is it now where these players are going to fall off a cliff? We don't know. We really don't know. But will they? Yes, 100%. I think that is the time Jurgen Klopp needs to get right.
And you're saying, I think that's what's fascinating about Liverpool right now is, you know, looking at what's happened with previous Jurgen Klopp iterations in terms of what happened at Dortmund, maybe they've got another one more season, I think, is the outside hope in this. And I think we're still sort of reaching burnout at this point, even at this point in the season, which is why it's good they won the title so early in unprecedented circumstances. It is going to be interesting though to see what they do with someone like Trent, because I still think that With the young Nico Williams, who's coming through at right back for Liverpool, who could be a very promising young player, we might see Trent moved into midfield. And I think that Liverpool are looking at buying time in order to do that. Dave, you're mouthing no. I mean, you know, a few weeks ago, people were saying similar about the likes of Mason Greenwood. They were saying, oh, is he really that good? Is he really that talented?
But no, I don't mean nothing to do with Williams at all. I just think Trent at fullback is where he needs to play right now. The most influential players in world football
right now, Dave,
is at fullback. Right now. Right. That is where the influential position is. What Trent offers from fullback is incredible. You know, not only switching the play, passing to the final third, passing to the penalty area, crossing to the box, chances created, assists, goals, everything. Don't move him. He is the best right back in world football.
Ahead of Aaron Wan-Bissaka, Dave?
Well, Aaron's improved recently, actually. If we're looking at his expected assists over the last 10 games versus the previous 20, big improvements. Or I think it's almost like 1-4 he's improved.
The funny thing is, though, Dave,
improvement, Lawrence. I have
Is that not 300%? Okay. I had this debate not long ago. I got a lot of replies about Aaron Wan-Bissaka because someone else on a show that I was on falsely compared Aaron Wan-Bissaka and Trent.
That would be a
straw man to set up, wouldn't it, Dave? That you just don't need.
Yeah, I think they maybe they're looking for something out of you, Lawrence. If they truly believe that, they probably need to spend a bit more time on YouTube watching Premier League highlights.
Yeah, exactly. Or maybe they don't do that because they're a coach in another league. But the point is, though, that both these guys can be good. I also still think that Liverpool harbour wishes for Trent to be a more central figure in that Liverpool squad, because at the moment he is. Part of me worries, I'm looking at the average age for Liverpool at the moment, and obviously Thiago won't be helping that. I think Liverpool have got something like the 14th highest age, average age in the Premier League. It's quite high. It's 28.6. Sorry, it was either 26.8 or 28.6. And it's quite high. Whereas a few seasons ago, it was actually on average one of the lowest in the Premier League. But that probably speaks to how good their squad is, et cetera, et cetera. It also speaks to the fact they've got a James Milner in there and a few other older players that raise the average age. But I still worry that when Liverpool lose that spine of leaders, is Trent at the point in his career, and is he going to be at the point in his career to be able to lead Liverpool? Can you also make your captain a right back, et cetera, et cetera. There's so many different things. There's so many questions.
Just to finish then, does this make sense to you? Because all I'm going to say is the rumour mill is in overdrive, obviously, with Thiago. He's somebody who's been linked to Liverpool before. Jurgen Klopp has come out and spoken about how Liverpool are going to be restricted in the transfer market. They're not going to be able to spend the cash like they have in previous windows. There's going to be a limit there. There's going to be a realism there. Is a 29-year-old Thiago Alcantara the prime need for this Liverpool side in order to retain that championship? Or is there another position, another area they should be looking at?
Yeah, there are other positions. I mean, clearly you're going to need a backup left-back for Andy Robertson. I think Andy Robertson's dropped off a cliff towards the end of the season because of partying as opposed to actual tactics or anything else.
He's a little bit hungover still in the Orange.
He's fair play.
He's fundamentally Andy Robertson is a good player, and a lot of other left-backs in the league look at both of Liverpool's full-backs and the way that they play. Part of me worries, actually, though, that Andy Robertson is similar to a Henderson, a Milner, a Gini Wijnaldum, because he may have been improved by Jurgen Klopp. I don't want to call it a superficial sense, but Jurgen has this power to be able to temporarily improve players. It doesn't mean that they don't inherently have these values within them. It just means that they need to unlock those. And those aren't things that you can permanently unlock as a player, because it can A, take a lot of mental strength, B, take a lot of physical endurance, and C, just mean that overall your career won't quite be as long or as fruitful because you are so drained from that. I personally think that if you can afford to spend 30 million on Thiago, you could have afforded to spend 50 million on Timo Werner. So I don't understand why Liverpool would buy a 30 million pound player that they believe may drop off a cliff in a couple of years when they might be able to retain another player or get someone for free or a much lower price from another team, especially when you look at what Michael Edwards has done in the past. But maybe Edwards is looking at his same charts that he did for other players and gone, this guy is actually worth 30 million.
Question, Lawrence. Do you think Liverpool will spend in the summer window?
But judging on the fact they did not buy Timo Werner, I can't see why if you turn down a transfer for Timo Werner, you would buy anyone else. I'm partly wondering, and I mean, the strange thing is, with FFP, this would again be a perfect time to buy a player, right? I'm wondering whether there's something from the top that's basically been said, you can only spend what you can get. Adam Lallana's off. Maybe they will move on a player and then they'll have another 20 million to add on top of that. But even then you think, well, surely then that Liverpool team have gone, right, well, we might get 15 million for him, or we might get blah, blah, blah. Okay, so we can afford Timo Werner. Timo Werner seems to be the indicator that Liverpool will not spend big in this window. And I think that's fair enough.
I also think
it's a problem because, again, Dave knows this from being a Manchester United fan. Refresh while you're strong. Refresh while the feeling around the club is good. And make your team better during a time when you're thriving as opposed to when you're forced to.
It is interesting, though. You've got players in the squad that could come in. Curtis Jones would be really interesting. Harvey Elliott could be really interesting in an attacking sense.
Rian Brewster could be quite interesting.
I also think Rian Brewster needs another season on loan just to get the minutes. Yeah.
And he's also not a Firmino type, and the Origi and other players, like a different player. Sadly.
And I think that's maybe for Liverpool that they might not win the league next season. Like, I think that probably won't happen, given if they don't recruit and City do. Like, simple as that, they won't win the league. But long term, it could be quite good to give these younger players minutes and give these younger players time. Because again, going back to the thing we spoke about before, average age of squad. So I've got the list up right now. Crystal Palace have got the oldest average age of the squad, 29 years old. Manchester United.
Roy Hodgson takes that age right up, though.
He does, yeah. Literally boosts it a little bit. But Man United is the youngest, 24.6. Arsenal second youngest, and Chelsea third youngest. So really exciting for those three teams.
Spurs
are rocking mid-table. They're around 10th. Liverpool are in 7th with an average age of 26.7. City at 26.8. So that's the interesting side, that those two teams are championship teams. You have to have the perfect age. And I think they've got the perfect age right now. But again, I think it's about getting that age down, as Lauren said. I think that is very important for Liverpool.
We're also looking at the fact here, Boltwood, that I think all three of these players are on the cusp of 30.
Yes.
What you love?
I thought you were talking about. I thought you were talking about us. We were on the
no. Sure, look at reality.
Yeah, we're on the cusp
over
the
hill.
Yeah.
All of the front three are on the cusp of 30.
Yeah,
for Liverpool.
Like yeah,
and they're nice in many ways. Once you're past 30, you're done. You're on the scrap.
Some would say. Oh,
sorry.
No,
so, yeah, sorry, Lawrence. So I think when I turn 30, I realised the party is only just getting started, Lawrence.
Sure. and that is why Viagra is a fantastic pill.
No, I don't need Viagra yet, Lauren. That'll be around 50, bro. That, you know, I'm absolutely fine right now. Thanks for asking, bro.
Hey, there's no shame.
No,
there's no shame in it.
I'm not saying that.
Medicine.
Don't, you know,
yeah,
absolutely.
Exactly. On that note, guys, I think that is the perfect place to leave it. I can't think of a better place to end this week's Front Free podcast.
Dave doesn't need Viagra. He just looks at tactical maps.
Yeah, that's it. It's just straight away. Like a rocket. Yeah. Let's... Thank you very much for listening, guys. Really appreciate it. Dave, thank you. It's been wonderful to speak to you again.
Well, hopefully, Boltwood, we can continue this.
Lawrence, thank you so much. Wonderful stuff.
Thanks for having me.
We'll see you guys next week. Until then, stay safe, stay healthy, and check us out on Twitter @thefront3. Bye-bye.